can't call it an adventure unless it's tinged with danger. Brian Blessed.
At some point, the trail took me and Carmen, that was the week I was hiking with Carmen, took us both to a landmine field. And it was completely out of trail. We had to go down a cliff, basically, on large rocks. It was very annoying. And once we were down there, this was the landmine, and we didn't realize it would be there. And you had like signs everywhere, like red signs with a skull saying landmine, 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 landmine everywhere. But we couldn't go back up because it was such a damn cliff that we had to push. And we pushed through the landmine, and you had like those little wood stick that were stabbed in the ground with a little ribbon, a red or a white.
I'm Doc, and this is the John Freakin' Muir Pod.
Welcome to the John Freakin' Muir Pod. Lace up those boots and sling on the pack for a romp through trails, short and long. With your host and Renaissance man, Doc, it's time to embrace the suck.
Welcome back to another week on the Trail Dirtbags and Hiker Trash. I'm Doc, and this is the John Freakin' Muir Pod. Let's start off with a reminder. If you are enjoying the podcast, take just a minute, help us out, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. And if you're not enjoying the pod, well, just go ahead and keep that to yourself. All right, let's get to this week's guest, who is a hiking podcaster himself, as well as a thru-hiker and a trail creator. Welcome to the John Freakin' Muir Pod, all the way from France, Thomas Buisse. Okay.
Yes.
I nailed it before the podcast started. And of course,
that was perfect.
Yeah. Nice. How's it going, Thomas?
It's good. I'm back into civilization, and it's taking me a bit of adjustment, but I'm starting to get the hang of cars and stuff.
You've been out and about for a while, huh?
Yeah. I was on the trail for 5 months, and then I hid. I hid in Toulouse, which is a city in the south of France, for a month to try to recuperate from that. And now I'm back in Brussels, so in a capital city. And yeah, that's kind of a change.
Brussels is not in France, though, is it?
No, it's in Belgium.
Right.
Yeah. It's right above France. And I'm actually French, but I've been living in Belgium for something like 13 years. So it's been a while.
So welcome to the John Freakin' Muir Pod, all the way from Belgium, Thomas Buisse.
Yes, Thomas Buisse, that's worked.
Hey, Thomas, in all that time out on the trail, have you picked up a trail name? Or is that like a uniquely American thing where people are handing out trail names based on their oddities, peculiarities, where they're from, strange things that happened?
So it's definitely an American thing. So I've done two big hikes, two through hikes, which one was in Croatia and one was obviously in France. And those countries don't really have this culture of giving trail names. So I don't really have a trail name based on a death trail, for example, and the people I met didn't give me one. But from Croatia, I actually got a trail name. That was more of like a nickname people would call me because of one of my particularities. So I guess it would fit the bill, definitely. And this trail name was Pomalo. And Pomalo in Croatian is a word that basically says, take it easy, like relax. It's a word that they use for everything, pretty much. So like if you're running late and you're sending a message like, oh, I'm sorry, I might be late, they will say, ah, Pomalo, we don't care. It doesn't matter. Just, you know, take it one step after the other. And the reason why I got that one was because I was the slowest hiker ever to finish the trail, and it's something I'm very proud of. I'm extremely slow, and I would never ever say no to anybody inviting me to have a drink. And in Croatia, they invited me a lot to have a lot of drinks. So in the end, everybody was just happy to see me. Hey, Pomalo, come and have a drink. So yeah, it kind of stuck.
Pomalo, does it translate to like chill in English?
No, I would really like, it's more of a take it easy, because it's okay. They even use it in the south, in Dalmatia. They even use it to say hello. They say to each other, pomalo, pomalo. It's kind of a greeting. It's a one word fits all kind of situation to be cool.
Okay. All right. Well, on the podcast, we try and go by trail names as much as possible. So I will sprinkle in some pomalo along the way.
Okay.
All right.
Oh, and to make it a little bit more complicated, most of the people know me as Cartapouille, because it's the name I used when I was a teenager playing video games, and that's also the name of my Instagram. That's the name I have on the Discord channel with everybody else of the Hexatrek. So you can go by Thomas Cartapouille Pomalo, and everything works.
Cartapouille?
Cartapouille.
Cartapouille? Is there an N at the end there?
No. It's Pouille for the end. Pouille.
Oh.
It's insanely French and absolutely impossible for foreigners to pronounce. And every time people were asking me, hey, where can I find you online? I say, oh, my Instagram, Cartapouille. And every time I realize my mistake of using this name, because nobody can understand that.
What does Cartapouille mean?
Literally nothing. It's literally a made up word that I found cool when I was a teenager. There is a story with a pool behind it, but I only talk about that when I have a beer. And this name was unique in the world, and I found it super cool. And I was playing Counter-Strike and some kind of very hardcore video games. And as a teenager, you want to build some confidence. So everybody was using names like Nightmare and the Fossoyeur, which in French is very terrifying. And I was coming in the arcade games called Cartapouille. And that was my little pleasure to hear people say, hey, who is this Cartapouille who's killing us again?
Okay. All right. So Thomas it is.
Yes, that works as well.
Hey, Pomalo, have you listened to the podcast before?
No, I haven't. Haven't yet.
Oh, this is great. You're coming in completely cold. You're not sure what's laying in store for you. So this is going to be great. I want to make sure that you are aware of a segment that we have towards the end called the Pro Tip Inside of the Week. That's where I will turn to you and ask you to share some trail wisdom with our listeners to make sure that their next outdoor experience is even better. So don't be surprised.
Fine. All right, that's fine. I can handle that.
I mean, if you've been out there for 5-6 months at a time, I'm sure you've picked up some wisdom. So,
yeah, a few things.
We'll see. Okay.
The must bring gear review.
Hey, another feature we've been doing this season is the must bring gear review, sponsored by the ultralight backpacking gear company Six Moon Designs. And here's how it works. If you were to let a stranger pack your bag with pretty much generic gear for a multi-day hike or a multi-month hike, what is the one specific piece of gear you would insist on being packed? And if you've got a particular brand for that specific piece of gear, even better. So, Pomalo, what is your must-bring piece of gear out there?
Actually, yeah, I thought about this question. I could talk about a lot of things, like my pocket knife, which is a very French pocket knife. It's an Opinel. I could talk about my watch that I love dearly, and I could not imagine going out in the world without it. But
Thomas, hang on a second. I can't let that pass. You held up a pocket knife and you said it's a very French pocket knife. What makes a pocket knife French?
This is an Opinel for the people who can see it, maybe. The Opinel is the standard pocket knife for French people for, I don't know, like hundreds of years. It has been made for the king, usually, like originally. And on the knife, you can see on the blade, there is a little crown with a little hand. This is the hand of some kind of royalty or something, and a crown which indicates that it's from the king. Everybody in France will have this. This is the cheapest knife you can buy. It costs 10 euros, even less in some places. It is made out of carbon mixed blade, so it means that it can rust, but you can sharpen it with literally anything, anytime. And it is I own a Sibenza, which is American made, one of the most expensive blades you can find as a pocket knife. But I would never go out with my Sibenza because it's a fantastic knife. It's precision made, there is titanium and everything. But the Opinel is just indestructible, extremely easy to use. It has just like this lovely feature that is just wood. It's a wood handle that gets patina over time. The blade gets patina over time. It's the sharpest thing ever. You can sharpen it on literally, when you have a coffee in town, you can sharpen it on the bottom of your coffee cup and you can always have like a sharp knife with you. I don't know a single person who goes out without this. And it's so famous, even in Croatia, they all have it. It's the best knife. It's really the best knife. I just love this thing.
So Thomas, is that a common thing? If I were to go to a coffee shop in France, all the guys and gals would be sitting there sharpening their knives on the...
No, actually, this is the thing that I discovered. And this is a tip I gave to a lot of people who had it. Because the Opinel will come in two different blades. You have the inox, so it means the stainless steel, and you have the carbon one. And most people now, for conveniency, will take the stainless steel. But don't be a fool. Don't do that. Take the carbon version. It has been made to be a carbon version for a real reason, and it is to be sharpened on literally anything. Even a rock can sharpen it. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that my beard after 2 days can sharpen it as well. It's very practical. It's just take the carbon version, and you will eat so many saucisson and cheese that it will be always greasy and will never rust. So,
well, you heard it there from Pomelo. Don't be a fool. Take the carbon. Take the carbon.
Exactly.
Right, but I interrupted you. You were waxing eloquent on your must bring piece of gear.
Yeah, I can talk about my gear for hours. So I will just talk about this thing that I have in my hand that the camera doesn't want to focus on. And this is obviously my beret. I'm not wearing it right now because I have this helmet, this headphones. And if I take it off, I can't put it correctly. But this beret has been sitting on my head for 5 months crossing France. At first, I thought it was a nice gimmick. So to cross France with a beret was kind of funny to me. And also, I wanted to be recognizable because I'm one of the co-creators of the Trek. And because we had a lot of other people on the Trek, I wanted to be sure that those people could recognize me on the Trek. And I was not the only one wearing it. I co-created it with three other people. And two of them were hiking it, also with a beret. So we all had a beret saying, hey, we are basically staff. If you see somebody with a beret, that's us. Just you can talk to us. And at first, it started like a kind of a joke almost. And I have to say, this is the thing I was the most thinking about on my trek. I was so happy about this beret every day because it is really the best protection you can have in the wild. I've been using hats forever and hoods and everything, but the beret beats everything. It doesn't get hot. In the sun, you're absolutely protected because it covers more of your face. It doesn't get blown away. When it rains, it's 100% waterproof. It's made out of merino wool, so it doesn't stink at all. It stays in shape, and it's handmade by the last beret manufacturer in France. So it's kind of a big deal because it's made in France. It's this French symbol, and everything was working like perfectly fine. And I don't even go out without the beret anymore. And that's just, I'm in love with the thing. It's just, I don't understand why people don't wear beret in the wild. I just don't get it. That's crazy to me now.
Thomas, I'm fired up. I'm gonna go buy a beret right now as soon as we're done.
You should. And actually, this woman who does this beret, she does it so by hand. There are only two. And we approached them because we wanted to actually make Hexatrek beret, so the beret based on our trek. And she said, no, because that means that I would need to hire more people to work, and I don't want to grow. So I love your project. It's really cool. But I don't feel like working more. So no, I'm not doing that. But I'm going to give you three berets, guys. And so we had three berets for free. And now I'm talking about this place. It's called Manufacture de Beret. And if you really need to buy a beret one day, this is the only place I would buy a beret. It's genuine. It's indestructible. It has been proven on the field now. This thing is a beast. And when you take a nap, it's very practical as well. So that's really cool.
Do they do shipping, or do I have to actually go to the store to get it?
No. They have a website, and you can order online, luckily. And I know even that they have some kind of partnership with Australia, and there is an Australian reseller, a guy that is like crazy about berries and like starting the berry culture in Australia, which I find very funny. but it's used. I mean, the berry is used by shepherds in France a lot. If you go to the Pyrenees, you will see most of the shepherds have a beret on their head, and they stay in the mountains for months. So there is a reason, maybe.
Yeah. And I love this concept. I have this mental image of the three of you. The three of you who have created Hexatrek out there wearing these berets as identifiers of, this is who we are. We're the guys that created the trail. Do you guys have Walmart in France? Have you heard of Walmart?
No. I even visited a Walmart when I was in the US.
Okay. So, in Walmart, they all wear the vests to indicate
Yes.
that they work there. So it's kind of like your version of Walmart vest. You've got
Yeah.
the on out there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Nice. Hey, to help us talk about gear, I know you sound like you could talk about gear forever. To help us talk about it, we've got something we call
It's the hiking pole.
the hiking pole. Now, this is a 7-question survey that's going to help me give you a score from 1 to 100 on the sanity scale.
Okay.
With 1 being completely insane and 100 being completely sane.
Okay.
Now, anybody
Okay.
who's been out on the trail for 4, 5, 6 months, they already have a 25-point deduction automatically. So the top score that you can have is 75.
All right.
Okay. Now, it's pole, hiking pole, it's POLL, like a survey. It's not like the poles you
Yeah.
put. Yeah. So if I were to ask your friends or family, hey, how would you score Thomas on the sanity scale? Give him a score from 1 to 100. Where do you think they'd put you?
Oh, if you ask my mom, it's going to be hard. I haven't had a real job in 3 years, so she would probably say 100, because that's what she is the most like. No, that's vice versa. Okay, so
Way around,
zero.
zero.
Crazy. Maybe 20, because she knows I can cook, so that's reassuring to her. If you ask my friend, I think I score very high. I'm not a ludicrous kind of person. I take a few gambles. If you take my friends from the south of France, they would say I'm kind of crazy because I can go in eastern countries, and to them it's kind of impossible. But if you ask my friend in Brussels, I think they would score me like a very, very sane person. I just ride a motorcycle, which I think would take maybe 5 out, because it's kind of dangerous. But when you live in Brussels, this is the only dangerous thing you can do. It's ride a motorcycle, and hiking is not really crazy. I'm not doing like I don't know, like jumping in on cliffs with a parachute. How is it called? Parachutism, parachutist. I
Yes.
don't know. I'm not doing that. So I'm just hiking and living in the capital city of Europe. So I think they would rank me quite high.
Okay. Well, I'm gonna give you a score. It's based completely on my opinion of your answers, whether or not
Okay.
I agree with you or not, and totally subjective, right? So, also, in addition to giving me your answer, you want to give me a little explanation because there may be an answer I don't agree with necessarily, but you could maybe explain and kind of
Okay.
persuade your point of view. And you said that your mom would give you a 20 because you know how to cook. What's your go-to meal? What's your favorite thing to cook?
Oh, I got plenty. Meat would be my favorite, like a normal, like this is my all-time favorite is a côte de bœuf, so a beef rib. This is very popular in France, and I've been eating a lot of those after my trail because I was dreaming of them. I was hiking next to the actual cows all the time that were fed in the mountains, and they looked so happy, and I'm like, I want to eat your rib. So that would be one of those. And otherwise, I love Korean food. I make a very amazing bibimbap. I'm really good at bibimbap. And you have to know also that in Belgium, French fries are not called French fries because,
It's called fries.
yeah. They would murder you if you say French, because there is a war between France and no, not between France actually. Just the Belgian are fed up as French people doing fries, because Belgium has a religion around fries. The fries here are nothing like you can imagine. It took me 5 years to master the Belgian fries, and now I make, I think, maybe the best fries in the country. And I can go on a fight with that. I have a secret recipe that I worked on for a long time, and my fries are insane. But no, on every basis, I'm cooking very basic stuff like a piece of meat and some vegetables, stuff like that. I'm really like basic on that one. But yeah, and eggs, a ton of eggs, love eggs.
Two follow-up observations there. When I asked you what's your favorite thing to cook, and you just said meat. I think if you just left it that, that would have been hilarious. Yeah, meat. Those cows didn't know what kind of danger they were in.
No.
They're walking by. And then I'm also very tickled that we've got a Frenchman in Belgium cooking Korean food. That's like the multicultural right there. So, okay.
Yeah.
So seven questions. You have no idea what I'm going to ask you. Are you ready?
Yeah, go for it.
A little nervous?
I mean, we'll see.
All right. Question. Easy question. Trekking poles or no trekking poles?
Trekking poles.
And this, is where, for sure. this is where you give the explanation of your answer.
Okay. Yeah. Trekking poles. I started hiking without, obviously, like everybody, and I thought I was cleverer than everybody else by not taking them. And I took them just because my tent needed it. I have those this duplex tent from Z-Packs, and I had to have trekking poles. The first day of my first through hike, I didn't use them. Second day, I just like, let's see. And I never stopped. And it's impossible for me now to hike without. And the moment I have my trekking poles in my hand is the moment I'm hiking. I know I'm hiking at this moment. Before that, it doesn't count. But the moment I have them, it's hiking.
Yeah, I asked this question intentionally over and over again in the hiking pole because I think there are a lot of novice hikers out there who, for whatever reason, they're not keen on trekking poles. They think they're gonna look funny. People are going to judge them. And it's like, you guys don't know what you're missing. You got it. You have.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And I had actually this fight with a friend in Toulouse. She's hiking all the time. And I was like, you have to try the trekking poles. No, I don't need it. I'm more nimble like that. And she's hiking all the time, like day hikes. And I think I became kind of posh about it. When I see people without trekking poles, I'm kind of judgmental. Probably not experienced hiker, which is bullshit, but it's kind of, you know, that's after a while I'm like, but it has only upsides, it doesn't have downsides. I don't, why not? This is a lost battle for some, but that's, I mean, trekking poles every day.
I also think it's fantastic that the only reason you tried trekking poles is because you had a trekking pole tent.
Yes. I would be still not using them and feeling stupid now. And my knees would be destroyed.
All right. Question number two. What's on your feet? Boots or trail runners?
Trail runners. Mm. Trail runners when I'm doing a long distance hike. I crossed France with three pairs of trail runners. And same, I didn't want to go for trail runners. I was dead against it. I was a boot guy, always been a boot guy. Even on my daily life, I have boots. I don't have sneakers, never wore a sneaker in my life. I'm not a runner. So I didn't want to go through that, but I started my Croatian hike with big boots from Lowa that were made for military jungle boots because I thought I was clever. It absolutely murdered my feet. It wasn't the good feet at all. My socks were full of blood. I could just like rinse them of blood. That was insane. So I switched midway to the first pair I could find in the small shop in Croatia, and they were Adidas. First time in my life I buy Adidas shoes. And it was a revelation. Again, like trekking poles, I was like, okay, now I get it. Yes, it's nice. It's very nice for long distance. Now on day hikes, I think I would still go for boots. I got a big pair of Mendel boots, German boots that I absolutely adore. And if I would do just a day hike, I think I would go for those, especially in winter conditions or if it's wet. I did some hiking in Georgia when it was very rainy and the mountains in Georgia are not really well maintained. So that was quite useful at this point to cross rivers and stuff. But otherwise, long distance trail runners.
I'm sensing a trend here. Your first two answers, you've started out with, you know, I thought I was clever.
Yes.
Maybe this isn't the 1 to 100 on the sanity scale. Maybe this is 1 to 100 on the clever scale.
Maybe, yeah. But I will not score very high there.
All right. Question number three. When it comes to shelter, are you a tent guy, tarp, hammock, bivy, or hey, let's go cowboy camping?
No. Oh my God. No, never cowboy camp. I'm terrified of insects. It's not that I'm terrified of insects, but I have this irrational fear that I will eat them in my sleep. And I don't want to ever wake up with a little fly just like between two teeth. I don't know why. I just have this idea that it will happen. No, I'm a tent guy. I got this duplex that I absolutely adore, even though we could say that it's almost a tarp because it's just one wall. But I absolutely love my tent. My tent is my house. It's been my house for a long time. Now it's getting old and it shows a lot of holes and I'm a little bit sad. But tent forever. Even on nice days, everybody was cowboy camping around me. You're like, nah, I'm putting my tent up. This is where I sleep. This is important.
Nice. Now, I talked to a guy who did the PCT, and he was dead set on cowboy camping. He was in a cowboy camp the whole thing. And
wow.
He did just fine for the first few weeks until he woke up with a scorpion on his face.
No. Yeah. See? That's, see? Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, that's a no. That's no to scorpions. I'm sorry. I'm old fashioned. No to scorpions.
All right. Question number four. Inside that tent, in terms of your sleep system, do you use a sleeping bag or a quilt?
Again, a quilt. This time it wasn't because I switched in the middle. I actually looked a lot. The first time I did a through hike in Croatia, I never through hiked before. So I had no knowledge, nothing. So I just reviewed a ton of YouTube videos, a ton of blogs, and I was already kind of dead set on having a quilt. So I went for a quilt and didn't regret it a single day. I still have the same quilt. It's a beast. I love it. So yeah, no, quilt all the way.
Okay. And then how about when it comes to food? Are you, do you carry a stove? Do you cold soak or are you stoveless?
I definitely carry a stove for my coffee. This is very, very important. I also carry a coffee maker because I refuse to drink instant. I'd rather not drink than having instant coffee. So I make my own coffee every day. I'm that precious. And I need to have warm food at night. It's important. Although I have been making a ton of fires, like campfires, and cooking on the campfire quite a lot. But again, I love cooking. I love eating. Cold soaking is not for me. I don't understand the concept of being sad with your food. The food is a source of happiness, and yeah, I will not skip on that.
Umalo, that sounds like a very French answer, that stove for your coffee, not instant coffee, but coffee. I have this great image of you now sitting out in the middle of nowhere, sipping on your coffee and sharpening your pocket knife on the bottom of the cup. So
that's my everyday.
All right, question number six. Life is better above or below the tree line?
Below. This is a reflection I had actually for the first time on this hike on the Hexa Trek, because we're going very high. We're going all the way to 3,000 meters up, and then we're staying in the mountains quite a lot. And I realized that when it's all rocks, I'm losing interest. I don't find any interest. And everything is dead. Everything is telling you should not be there. This is not a place for you because there is nothing. You cannot make a fire. How can you be happy in a place where you can't make a fire? I don't get that. I don't get those mountain goats that love to be. I mean, this is a constant battle we have with Kevin, the other founding member of the Hexa Trek. He is a mountain guy. He loves to be very high in the mountains, taking a ton of risk and stuff. And I'm the opposite. I love the mountains to look at. I don't need to go up there. Just like, it's beautiful. If I can have my campfire, I'm reasonably high. Yeah, okay. Exactly. Like, I like that. it's beautiful, but I need some grass and some trees, and I'm happy with that. You know, it's just like, let's make a nice fire, have some saucisson, some cheese, and just look at the mountain. We don't need to be up there. There is wind, rocks. It's annoying.
Have some cheese and some coffee and sharpen our pocket.
Yes, always.
Yeah. You know, I'm glad that you don't have strong opinions on things. You kind of.
Yeah, right?
Good. All right. Hey, last question in the poll. What's more important, pack weight or luxury items?
Tough one. On my first attempt, my first hike in Croatia, I went for being as light as possible. I spent a ton of money to be as light as possible. And on my second through hike, I was actually heavier. So I think that when it comes to hiking, I realized that the luxury of everyday was more important than my pack weight in the end. So I would lean towards more luxury, but I'm not crazy luxurious either. And I love to have very ultralight equipment anyway, so I can bring some more coffee. This is some kind of trade, is that every time I can shave 100 grams somewhere, I can pack something better, maybe. So I think I finished the trail with way more weight than I was expecting, plus I'm collecting along the way. And yeah, the comfort is very important for me when I am out in a trail.
Now, you're collecting along the way. What is a Frenchman who lives in Belgium and cooks Korean food? What is he picking up along the way?
Oh, I picked up a few things, things that I was missing, a ton of food. I have this problem that I always think that I will miss food. So I was carrying a ton of saucisson. So saucisson is a type of French delicacy. It's charcuterie. So it's a sausage that is dry, made out of pork. And it is extremely popular amongst hikers because it's basically our beef jerky. You can keep it in the bag. It doesn't go bad. It's full of protein and fat and salt, so everything you want. And saucisson, I always had saucisson and cheese in my pack. This was very important. And at some point, I think I had like four or five saucisson at a given moment because there was a huge sale, and I was like, I need to have more saucisson. Oh, and beer. I often carry a beer that I take in the city below, and then I go up the mountain with the beer, drink my beer, bring back the can, take another one for the up. So I was constantly having stuff more in my backpack. And I collected, I don't know, a few things like I think a rock at some point. That was just like weird. I carried a ton of stuff.
I imagine that the charcuterie board probably adds to your pack weight as well.
I do have a charcuterie board, obviously, a cutting board that was handmade to me and has my name on it by somebody in Croatia to thank me after the trail. And I love this thing. I mean, how can you cut your saucisson without your cutting board? I don't get it. And it's a I would never hike without. I need it. And the cheese as well. And you can prepare your sandwiches on it. That's just very, very efficient.
You know, I have a new question now for the hiking pole. Like, I'm going to add on there, you know, do you carry a reward or not, you know, for future guests?
That's important. I think it tells a lot.
It does. It's very revealing. Let me tell you. All right, Thomas, I've got to put your answers through the John Freaking Mirror algorithm to come up with this score here. I got to do some math, so bear with me a little bit. I got to carry the two. We're going to divide by root three, multiply by pi. And then we are going to adjust for the water temperature at dawn on the Adriatic Sea. And I come up with a solid score of 42. Although that that can trend downward as the interview progresses.
It can't go upward.
It could go upward. I don't think it's going to, though. I want to be upfront with you.
42. Okay. That's what's average usually?
Well, if 50 is kind of in the middle, so.
Okay, so most people go around 50. That's fine. I'm good with that.
You're closer to insane than you are sane, so.
Yeah, well, you know.
I think your mom's got something there.
Yeah, probably. She would be happy to hear that. Luckily, she will never, because she doesn't understand a word of English. So.
I have this translated into 90 different languages, so.
That's nice.
All right. Hey, before we get too far down the trail, Thomas, let's back up a little bit. Tell us about your background. Where'd you grow up? What kinds of sports and hobbies did you play as a kid? And how did you get involved in the thru hiking cult? Because let's face it, any group that convinces you to live in the dirt for months on end, that's got to be a cult.
There is something to it, yeah, definitely. And I'm not helping the case, the cause by creating the Hexatrack. I'm a typical French average person. I grew up a little bit everywhere in France because my family was moving around quite a bit. Settled in Toulouse when I was a teenager and grew up basically in the south of France. Nothing extraordinary. My parents are teachers, so you know we had like a very basic cozy lifestyle. I was not a sportive guy at all. I was hating sport. We all hated sport in the family, thinking that people who do sports are stupid by default. So I was a video game player. I was playing a lot of video games. And that was pretty much my life. After that, I went in Belgium to pass my master's degree in journalism. And discovering the beauty of Belgian beers, and it's never been the same ever since. Basically, I never really did any sport. I grew up in the south of France, so the Pyrenees were there. My grandparents are from the Spanish side of the Pyrenees, and so we were going in the little town of the Pyrenees called Saint-Lary-Soulan, which is actually on the Hexatrack. It's a little town with not many people, but a ski resort, and I've been passing a lot of time in this place. And so hiking with my parents in the Pyrenees, and I hated it because it was not a video game console. And then when I was 20 and fixed in Brussels, I kind of longed for the mountains again because there is absolutely no elevation in Belgium. The highest point in Belgium is 700 meters, and it's a hill. And they built a ski resort on it. So... yeah, baraque friture. But I kind of invented myself the idea that I was a hiker when I was 20 and continued my life thinking I was a hiker without really hiking ever. Buying a ton of hiking equipment just because I am a hiker, so I need to buy it, even though I used it maybe for one hike a year when I was going back to the south. So there is really no reason why I through hike today. What happened is that I stumbled upon an article about the Appalachian Trail when I was something like 25 and thought, oh my God, it's completely stupid. People are hiking that. What? It's not possible. It's not human. And then reading a little bit more, like, oh, that sounds stupid, doable. And reading and reading, I read the book A Walk in the Woods, classic, and really got me into like, oh, I hate bears. But I would love to do that. And then in 2019, my ex-girlfriend broke up with me after 10 years of relationship. So it kind of destroyed me. I was in a job that I hated. So everything was just down. And I'm like, ah, fuck it. Let's go alone in the woods for 6 months. So I started to do everything to go on the Appalachian Trail. I got even my visa, my B2 visa, to be 6 months in the US. And COVID hit. So when COVID hit, obviously it stopped me from going to the US and hiking. So I had to find another solution, and I discovered this hike in Croatia. And I went into Croatia with all my gear for the US. I even went with my bear bag. But there were tons of bears in Croatia, so I was happy. Even though locals don't understand the concept of bear bag, it's a thing that is just like, why do you have a bear bag? Like, if a bear attacks you, you put yourself in a bag? Why? I don't get it. They literally never seen a bear. So I ended up going there. I thru-hiked it, and I thought I would never be able to do it, and I did it, and I was kind of happy. I hiked some more the year after in the French Pyrenees. I did 150 kilometers in the Pyrenees. And after that, I stumbled upon the Hexatrack project, and that Kevin has been working on alone for the first 6 months, creating the concept. And I contacted him and said, hey, man, that's exactly what I wanted to do. Like, I crossed Croatia by foot and I can't cross France by foot. That's insane. We have tons of things to do. So I wanted to create it and he had the idea at the same time, but he did something I didn't. So I just contacted him and said, yeah, I want to do it with you. And so we started an NGO and we've been creating the Hexatrek. And then because we created it, I had to prove that it was doable. So I did it. I hiked it. As easy as that.
Nice. And we're going to put a pin in that because we're going to come back and talk about your Croatian hike and also the Hexatrek and what that's all about. We're going to take a quick break. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. From the backcountry to the backyard, we believe everyone deserves the highest level of protection. Since 1984, Sawyer Products offers the best, most technologically advanced solutions for protection against sun, bugs, and water, using time-released liposome technology, topical insect repellents, and new standards in water filtration. And with every Sawyer product you buy, you are helping to provide clean water through 140 charities in 80 countries with their long-lasting water filters. Every Sawyer product you buy is an investment in our common humanity. Choose Sawyer and keep the adventure going, knowing that their products have been tested and chosen by those who count on serious protection on the trail all day long. Six Moon Designs has been innovating ultralight backpacking gear for the past 20 years. With a wide range of products ranging from ultralight shelters to backpacks and accessories like their extensive line of trekking umbrellas, Six Moon Designs is sure to have a great piece of gear for your needs. With the company philosophy being that gear should aid one's experience, not define it, Six Moon Designs thinks the more time people spend outside the natural world, the better off this world will be. And remember, go wild, live young. This episode is sponsored by Jolly Gear. Are you tired of compromising between the ventilation of a button-down and the full protection of a sun hoodie? With the Triple Crown button-down, you can have the best of both. Plus, their fun standout patterns will have you the talk of the trail. Visit them at jollygear.com. Through hiker owned, Jolly Gear, where fun meets functional. And welcome back. We are talking to Thomas Buisegui.
Buisegui, yeah, that's good.
Buisegui, Buisegui, yeah.
Buisegui.
All right, I'm not gonna butcher it any further. Also, trail name Pumalo. Okay.
Pumalo. Yeah,
got it. And you know, I have to tell you, Pumalo, that often I look for the episode title, the podcast episode title, as we go through the interview. And at the end of the last section, I think you stumbled across it. You said that you're just a typical French guy. And you know what? I'm thinking that atypical is all one word.
Atypical. Oh, okay. I see.
I think that sums it up. I'm really enjoying this and your perspective on things. I think it's a youth perspective. So I think you're atypical no matter where you're from. So that may be the episode outline on the episode title, unless we come across something even better here in the second segment.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, I hope it can only go up from now.
Okay. Now, this is interesting that we're going to talk about the Via Adriatica. That's the Croatian trail that you did.
Yes. It's a long trail in Croatia. Basically, the idea is to cross Croatia from border to border, and alongside the mountain range that is it's the Alps. Basically, it's the end of the Alps that still goes into the Balkans, and this part is also constantly on the shore of the Adriatic Sea. So you're hiking on mountains looking down at the sea. So it's just gorgeous. It's ridiculously beautiful. You have landscapes every day that just blow your mind, and it's a very, very, it's a brand new trail. When I hiked it at the time, I had no idea what I was doing. I just went there completely virgin. Yes.
Yeah. Couple questions before we get into that.
Yeah.
I had on the podcast Nikola Horvat, who was the creator. He did the PCT and he went back to Croatia and said, why don't we have something like this in our country? And so he's the founder, I think, of the Croatian Long Trail. This is different than the Croatian Long Trail.
It is different and it's kind of similar. I mean, a lot of the sections, especially in the mountains of Velebit, Biokovo, I think, as well, are the same. But the Croatian long distance trail doesn't go only on the shore, but also inland at some point. So you're doing like some kind of a V, and not just a line. I didn't even know it existed before I started the Via Adriatica. I don't even remember how I really found out about it. It was completely random. And I know that there is this kind of little feud about which one is a real one and blah, blah, blah. But in the end, that's like, when you have two trails that are trying to be the trail, it's always a little bit of a, we don't know, etc. So I'm kind of out of all this like creation drama by now, but I was a little bit into it because I met a lot of people.
This is good to know because Nikola is going to come back on the podcast. That episode outline all done. We're just trying to coordinate a time. And now I can throw in this piece of information that, tell me about Via Adriatica. I mean, have you hiked that before? And see just, if that really gets his dander.
But I think it did hike it as well. If I'm not sure. I mean, I'm mixing people, but I think he hiked it as well. But the Via Adriatica, basically the idea was to create this long distance trail to cross a country by foot, which is something I really like. When I started it, I had no idea it wasn't a thing because they have a fantastic website that lured me into thinking that it was an official trail of Croatia. And it absolutely wasn't. It was under development, only volunteer-based. So no money. So they can't create anything, really.
It's a good-looking website. I pulled it up. I pulled it up before we started today. It looks really good. So I can
it's gorgeous.
You might have been fooled to thinking that, this is a well-established path.
Yeah, exactly. So the moment I hiked it, it was only been 3 years that the trail existed, and I was the 10th person to hike it. So that was also something completely different this time, but I didn't know that back then. I discovered that in the end. The year I hiked it, we were three this summer to hike it. One American girl with Croatian roots, one Croatian girl, and myself. They were all doing their own stuff, and I was hiking by myself. I didn't know there was a community behind it before 2 weeks, something like that. I thought I would be hiking alone, completely alone, and just figure things out. And I ended up being in one of the largest online community there. It was amazing. I had so much support. People were crazy about the three of us. We were like the rock stars of the summer in Croatia. People would recognize me in the street, ask for selfies, invite me to drink at their house, invite me for showers, invite me on the island after. It's like, yeah, come to the island after, we can have a party. So that was absolutely insane. I became a sensation when I thought I would be just alone in the woods thinking about my breakup. So that was kind of interesting. I had the chance to meet also one of the two other hikers, Carmen, and to walk a little bit with her. She is a mom of two, and she had a completely different mindset, and we got along really fine. We walked for a week together, and that was very funny because she also had a fame. She had like articles in the paper and everything. So that was like weird because you're just here on holidays. You're just like, I'm walking on my free time. People are asking me, but who is paying you? I'm paying. I mean, it's just, it's so bizarre. When you go to the beach, nobody is cheering you like, yes, you're doing beach very well. It's not possible. So I was very surprised that people could be excited about it. And I loved it. I loved it. It was very fun. And
a French sensation on the Croatian trail with groupies.
I mean, that was nice.
That might be a battle, a French sensation. Yeah.
Ah, it's a new one. See, we can pick. We can pick. There will be another one, maybe. We don't know. Yeah. But no, it was very nice. The trail wasn't that difficult for most of the sections because it's, for example, if you go in the Velebit is the main mountains in Croatia, and you have the Premusic trail, which is a trail that is impressive for 70 kilometers. They built in the 1910s. A high route over rocks that should not be there by hand with like pickaxes, and this thing is beautiful. Also in Croatia, you have a ton of mountain huts that are open for anybody and are maintained by groups of hikers that take a lot of pride in well maintaining those huts. So you have the best huts in the world in Croatia, and you can sleep for free in most of the places. It was really impressive. And at the same time, the trail in the mountains were good, but whenever they had to make junctions, it just didn't exist. So you had a GPS that were telling you, you see this wall, it's there. And I, the first time it happened, it was a week after I was starting hiking. I was really like on the foot of a mountain, looking up into a wall of vegetation with no single element indicating that it could pass. It was a jungle and saying, go through it. And I didn't believe it. I had to contact somebody like, it isn't really there, because I was going up and down, like there is no way, there is no, and it is the way. And the way is you push your face against the vegetation and then you keep doing that for 2 kilometers. and you always end up being scratched everywhere, bloody with spiders on your face. And it's just all the time like that, because the places that are not maintained by professionals or volunteers all left as it is, and the only people passing are the people doing the Via Adriatica, and that's 10 people. So that was difficult. You had like very difficult sections.
That had to be terrifying for you. I mean, especially with your fear of insects.
Well, I don't have a fear of insects. I just don't want to eat them. I'm fine with them crawling. It's fine. I don't care. I just don't want them to be in my mouth. So this is the place.
You pushed your face through the vegetation and you made sure your mouth was closed.
Exactly. You close everything and you just push on. And at the beginning, it's terrifying. And at the end of the trail, I was just going headfirst everywhere. I didn't care. It was really like, it's a second nature. You just like go into the bushes. It's normal.
Nice. All right. Hey, have you heard of type 2 fun?
I looked into it. So it's this kind of fun. Is it related only to being in a difficult situation and after finding it fun, or what is the actual definition?
Yeah. So type one fun is you're having fun doing it, but you don't really talk about it much after it's over. There's a lot of type one fun out there. It's fun when it happens, but it's not very memorable. Now, okay. Type two fun is you are definitely not having fun while it's happening, but these are the stories you love to tell after the fact. I mean, these are the stories that you tell at your family gatherings. In fact, your family is gets so tired of them, they see you coming and they head the other direction. Did you encounter any serious situations out there that you're like, oh my gosh, what is going on here? So you weren't really having fun when it happened, but these are the good stories.
Well, yeah, obviously, I was confused by the idea of type 2 fun, like it becomes fun after when you think about it, because I hold a grudge. When a situation is not fun, I'm hating the situation until the end. It makes for a good story, but I'm hating it. And I could, if I could, I would stop thinking about it, but I can't. Yeah, obviously. For example, during my Via Adriatica, I was on the landmine field. Because there are still landmines in Croatia from the war of the 90s, from the Balkan War. And they are trying to demine. So Bosnia has a lot of it. Croatia has still a little bit of it, not so much, but still enough to be annoying. And it's deep in the mountains, so it's really hard to demine in Croatia. And on top of that, because the war was unconventional, usually when you put landmines, you put them on a map. And then after that, when the war is over, you can just grab them back. But the way it happened in Croatia, the way they explained it to me, is that one army came, put some mines, the other army came, put their mines over the other ones, and vice versa. So you have like this kind of cake of mines that are everywhere, and that are now 30 years old, 20, 30 years old. Yeah, kind of old, but still there. And at some point, the trail took me and Carmen, that was the week I was hiking with Carmen, took us both to a landmine field. And it was completely out of trail. We had to go down down a cliff, basically, on large rocks. It was very annoying. And once we were down there, this was the landmine. And we didn't realize it would be there. And you had like signs everywhere, like red signs with a skull saying landmine, 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 landmine everywhere. But we couldn't go back up because it was such a damn cliff that we had to push. And we pushed through the landmine and you had like those little wood stick that were stabbed in the ground with a little ribbon, a red or a white. But we didn't know what it meant. So apparently there should have been a corridor that was safe, but it was impossible to say. On top of that, everything was overgrown because nobody has been demining that since 20 years. So some trees fell on it. The ribbon like flew off in many places. So you literally have no idea what you're doing. And you have to push through this kilometer of landmine field. That is the least fun I had in my entire life because I really thought this is it. Because you cannot predict it. And because I've been watching way too many movies, I said to Carmen, let's separate from 15 meters, so just in case. And after that, I read that they were using bouncing mines that can kill all the way to 100 meters, so that was useless anyway. So we crossed it.
Did you make her go first?
Yeah, of course. I'm a gentleman. No, I can't remember. I think
that is terrifying.
It's horrible. It's horrible, and I'm pretty sure that it has been mainly demined, and it was a safe zone. I'm pretty sure it was, but on the moment when you have signs everywhere, you are absolutely certain it is landmine fields that is still active, because otherwise they would not put signs. Especially because it's in the middle of absolutely nowhere. It's really hard to get to this place. So why would they bother?
Umlo, I'm thinking this is why the only 10 people have done the trail.
No, but they have removed this section since now. The trail has evolved a lot. It was 3 years ago. So now there is absolutely no risk whatsoever. But then at this point, it was really horrible. We pushed through it and we were really on the edge. Both of us were really, really mad. So we had to sit down and just like, and I took out my emergency rakia. So rakia, I can show any. Rakia is alcohol from Croatia.
Emergency alcohol.
And this is something I learned in Croatia. They never go hiking without rakia because they don't. It's like not having your knife. It's impossible to even imagine because it serves for everything. In case you have a problem, you can drink it. In case you're cold, you can drink it. In case you have a cut, you can clean your wound. It's like the perfect thing to have.
Thomas, the Croatians know that there is a landmine field on the trail. They take the alcohol to drink before they go through, so they're not as terrified.
You're joking, but it's not that far away from the truth. When you take a breakfast in Croatia and they know you're a hiker, there is always a glass of rakia, because how can you go in the mountains without drinking rakia first? It's impossible. That makes no sense. So I took out the emergency rakia. We sat down, we drank, and it was like, the nerves were calming and like the hands stopped shaking. That was a nice moment when it was over. And then there was a guy with a gun because he was apparently hunting, and we saw it like right after. Like, is there a man on the gun looking? Oh, okay, yeah, no, forget it. I don't care. We're out to the minefield.
Thomas, I have to tell you that this is episode 219 of the John Freaking Muir Pod. So I've talked to a lot of people.
Yeah.
A lot of scenarios. We've gone through a lot of type 2 fun. This has to be the most terrifying piece of type 2 fun that I have ever heard. You know, coming face to face with a landmine field with no way to go back. You've got to go forward. and not you're not sure, you know, exactly, you know, is you know, how dangerous is this, and then doing it. And that's I can't even wrap my head around that.
Yeah, me neither. That's, see, that kind of thing. I have no idea how it happened. I know it's not the case anymore. So go on the Via Adriatica. It's safe. No worries. But it was a wild time back then, you know, 3 years ago. That was just, wow. It was the Far West. Just
back in the day. Back in the day.
Back in the day when I was young.
Hey, let's spend a little bit of time talking about the Hexatrek. You mentioned that a couple of times in the first segment.
Yes.
Tell us about that. I know you kind of referred to it as you know, there should be a trail where you'd be able to walk across France, just like you did with Croatia, but it didn't exist. And I'm assuming you came across it online, some guy who was trying to do that. And it's called Hexatrek.
Yeah, exactly. So basically the story is this. I crossed Croatia by foot and I was thinking I want to cross my country by foot. It makes more sense. And Kevin, so the guy who started it all, had the same idea. He did actually the PCT, and after doing the PCT was like, oh, why don't we have that in France? He started working on it, doing literally everything by himself at the beginning. So everything was kind of clunky. He spent a lot of time by himself in a 16 meters square room just thinking about it and just talking to himself and stuff like that. So when I discovered him, it was kind of an odd sight. But he had the idea of not asking for permission, which is something that I would not have done. So because it's France and it's very complicated legally on so many points, which is one of the main issues we have at the Hexatrek. So he just created it. He took a map and said, yeah, let's go like this. It completely out of nowhere, just like looking at maps. He never went to the Pyrenees and still like drew a line and was like, yeah, it should pass. It doesn't. Some places it doesn't. But it passed most of the time. And I discovered that, and it was exactly the idea I had. So I contacted him. I thought I would do it like in a 5 years period, because having all the authorization, talking to the main people, etc. And actually, no, because he was starting to do it. So we decided to actually go for a non-profit because he didn't really have like an idea. He's the kind of person who has a million of ideas, but doesn't really implement them. So then after that, I was like, okay, let's do something that we can actually do. And that was the non-profit. And we started working on the non-profit with another guy named Dylan, who did the Te Aroha in New Zealand.
Yep.
And had the same idea. He's a videographer. And shortly after that, we had William, who is now also part of the Hexatrek team, that joined us. So the four of us, we started working on this crazy idea to have the ultimate French trail. Thomas, we wanted to have Thomas,
yeah. Kevin, Dylan, and William.
Yeah.
Those aren't like your typical French names, are they?
It is. Actually, it's a joke in France. Kevin and Dylan are supposed to be very stupid people. That's the kind of name that we give to stupid people. And that's the joke everybody does. Like when somebody does something, ah, it's a Kevin. It's a Dylan. Because there was this trend in the 80s, because of all the sitcom from America, that some people would name their child after those names because it looked cool. But it looked cool only to the kind of people that are not. And so there is this kind of ongoing joke like Kevin, Dylan. So it's funny to have Kevin and Dylan. And on top of that, Dylan, I'm going to give a shout out to the guy. His last name is in French, Moron. But in English, Moron. So his name is Dylan Moron. And it literally spells the same. So yes, when we started this, I was like, it's good we have a Toma in the middle, because it's good there is a French name in the middle.
So the French, what I'm getting from this is that the French are making fun of Americans with the Kevin and the whole Kevin and Dylan thing.
No. It's not about the Americans. It's about the people who thought it was cool to name their child after Americans. And often than not, when you see somebody who makes a mistake, it's like your Florida man. Your Florida man here is a Kevin. Like somebody who does something stupid, it's definitely a Kevin. So
all of our listeners in Florida, keep listening. Don't get upset. We all know.
I'm sorry.
Weird things happen in Florida. If you see a headline, a bizarre headline in the news about something just absolutely bonkers that happens, I don't know. I don't care what it is. Odds are it's probably in Florida. It probably happened in Florida. So, okay. I'm sorry. I had to interrupt you and ask you about those names.
No, I understand.
Funny. Okay.
So yeah, and so we have, and William actually is binational, is French and British. So his name is British William, but it works in French as well. So yeah, we've been working on this basically on no ground because nobody has ever hiked it. We connected a lot of French trails and tried to find the best possible line to connect France. The idea was to try to go from one border to the other. So we're starting in the north of France. We're starting in Les Vosges, so next to Strasbourg at the border with Germany. Then we're going down all the Vosges, which is mountain range, then into the Alps, another mountain range. Then we're crossing into Les Gorges, the Vercors, and other places in more central France to avoid going to the Mediterranean. And then we're going straight down to the Pyrenees and then crossing all of the Pyrenees and ending up at the sea, next to the Spanish border. So the idea really is to try to take like a map of France and just having a line going like I'm going from one point to another, and staying as much as possible in the wild as it can be in France, to have a real through hike and not just a simple walk like you could have, like, for example, with the Camino. It's really, the idea was to have some kind of walk where you can tent almost every night and to really have this feeling of freedom that you get from through hiking.
Right. What do you know what the elevation gain is on that route?
Yes, it's subject to change. So the route is going to change quite a lot over the years. So this edition, it was 140,000 meters of elevation on the entire route. 140. Wow. Yeah. Yeah, it's a lot.
It's a thigh burner.
Yeah. That's, I mean, this is mostly done in the Alps and the Pyrenees because those mountains are freaking huge. And we're going up and down too much, a lot.
Now, I mean, one of the great things about some of the American trails, like the PCT, they're switchbacks. So when you're covering that elevation, you know, you're going up gradually, but mm-hmm. still it feels like you get up pretty quickly with not as much effort. I know on the AT, the Appalachian Trail, not as many switchbacks, and there's not as much elevation, but because of the lack of switchbacks, it's no joke. I mean, you're going straight up or straight down. With this new trail, any switchbacks on the trail, or is it like up and down?
It's very, it changes a lot depending on where you are. In some sections of the Alps and the Pyrenees, there are very nice switchbacks when it's kind of a famous place. And it's been arranged like that. And some sections you go straight up the mountain. Straight on the rocks, it gets very technical quite fast. So it really depends on the area. It depends on the kind of terrain that you are in. It's really hard to imagine doing, because I know the PCT, for example, has been thought to be done by a horse. So you should be like with a horse all the time. It's absolutely impossible to think that for the French mountains because of the way they are shaped. They are very aggressive style sometimes when you go in elevation. And it becomes very difficult. And at the same time, on the GR10, you have the GR10 is the section in the Pyrenees. On the GR10, you have some sections where they go straight up the mountain for no reason. There is a nice forest. They can do switchbacks, but no, they decided to go straight up, straight down. And you're just mad. Those days, it's really like, come on, just make me turn a little bit. It's just like, so yeah, it really depends all the time.
Rage hiking and then holding grudges.
Oh yeah, that's what I do all the time.
Yeah, I imagined that line that Kevin drew through the Pyrenees, that was the part where there's no switchbacks. He just thought, oh yeah, we can get through that. That shouldn't be a problem.
It is actually, because so you have the one main route that goes across the Pyrenees, which is the GR10. GR in French stands for Grande Randonnée. So it means it's an official hiking trail that is being maintained, that is in excellent condition. It's a joy to walk on. And it's very famous. You have a ton of people on it. You can always find somebody, etc. And then you have the HRP, the Haute Route Pyrénéenne, High Pyrenean Route. And this is a trek that doesn't exist. You have plenty of books on it, but there is no trail. And it's basically just an indication. Like, you see this pass over there, just go there. Find your way. And so the Hexatrek for the moment has a mix of the GR10 and the HRP. And you have this long section on the HRP that is really difficult, really hard, that I didn't do because I don't want to die. And so for the moment, it's kind of a mix of the two, but it will change on the next edition. We are making a lot of adjustments based on a lot of things. Because the trek, for example, for this year was really hard, really, 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 really hard. We have people who did the PCT saying that it's infinitely harder. It's like really, really, really a killer. So we're going to adjust to make it more doable for non-montane goats.
Okay, it's interesting. Very coincidental that the last person I interviewed, a 21-year-old who did the Appalachian Trail, Kaylin Brown, she also mentioned that one of her future goals was to do the HRP. This is the first time I've ever heard of the HRP. Now, in back-to-back weeks, we were talking about the HRP on the podcast. So that's a small world.
Yeah, it is. But it's quite famous, actually. We have a lot of people. Usually, you can see a difference between the HRP people and the GR10 people on the trail. So during my crossing of the Pyrenees, I stayed on the GR10 the whole way because the HRP doesn't interest me in the slightest. Again, all elevation, absolutely no comfort whatsoever. What's the point? But you could spot the people doing the HRP because they were having the best gear of them all. They were looking like Americans doing the PCT, and all the others that were looking like regular folks with like Decathlon bags, they were doing the GR10. And every time you meet somebody, they will tell you, no, I'm not doing the GR10. I'm doing the HRP. Kind of a little bit, you know, like smug about it. Like, no, GR10.
Little
GHRP. Yeah. Yeah, right. That's nothing. I'm a real one. I'm doing the HRP.
Now, Pumalo, you were the guinea pig for the Hexatrek?
One of them, yes.
One of them.
That's right.
You had three. They had three of you out there with berets doing the Hexatrek.
Yes, and we had plenty of people hiking it as well. So the trek didn't exist. We published the track and an app. We developed an app for the Hexatrek to have the GPS on it. And a lot of people actually did the Hexatrek this year. We don't have the final numbers yet of how many people hiked it, but at least 200, something like that. Tried the Hexatrek. Yeah. And that was amazing to meet a lot of them on the trail and to even hike with some of them at some points. So we were the guinea pigs. I was actually the first one to start the entire Hexatrek. I started in May, 6th of May. Another guy started before me, but he did just a section. So I was officially the first one to just like tackle the whole thing. And I was also the slowest one. And I wanted to stay it like that. So the joke was for all the people doing it sobo like me to try and catch up with me because they knew they could. So for a month, I didn't see anybody catching up with me. I was like, what the hell are they doing? And after that, every 2-3 days, I like somebody passing by. Hey! And some people I hiked with for a few weeks after that. It was kind of fun to have this this kind of crowd of people discovering the trail at the same time as us, mm-hmm. basically.
That's amazing. Now, with your experience on the Via Adriatica in Croatia, are you looking to bring that same type of spirit to the Hexatrek? Are we going to have groupies on the trail, people cheering you on as you're hiking? Or are the French a little bit different in that respect?
Oh, they are definitely different than that. They are not excited to see people coming, and they're not so proud of their country that they are so happy to have a foreigner enjoying it. It's more like, why are you here? No, I've been actually very surprised by the support of the French people. I was not expecting that. I was kind of a little bit afraid of that, that people would just be mad at you passing by. But 99% of all my encounters with local people when I was talking, because I spent my entire life talking about the Hexatrek. When I was talking to locals about the Hexatrek, they were all constantly excited by the idea. They loved it. A lot of people helped me without me asking for it. And a lot of trail magic happened without even like knowing what trail magic is for those people. So that was very, very, very enjoyable. But the Hexatrek being like for the first year, that is a dry year, just a test year, we already have like almost 200 people. We know we're going to have a lot of people every year because it's France, so we don't have to sell it. It's sold by itself. It's the Alps and the Pyrenees, plus all the things that you will discover in between them, because I think the best is not in the Alps and the Pyrenees at all. It's everything else. But we know we're going to have a lot of hikers. So because there will be so many hikers, there won't be rock stars. There will be regular folks. And on top of that, if you go in the Pyrenees and the Alps, you have plenty of hikers, so you're just one of the many. It's not very interesting in those places. It's more interesting in Les Vosges, it's more interesting in Les Causses, in Larzac, in all those places where they don't see so many hikers. But in the Alps and the Pyrenees, yeah, you're just a hiker.
Okay, and what is the length of the Hexatrek in its current form?
3,034 kilometers.
3,340 kilometers. What does that translate to in miles? Do you know?
I have absolutely no idea.
That up. Okay.
I would say less than
That'd be 3,340 times 0.6. So, all right. I'll do the math. I'll put it in the show notes.
I should know it. I should know it because I've talked to many Americans, but yeah, no, I forgot.
Fantastic. Hey, what is next on your list in terms of adventure? Is it just going to be continuing to refine the Hexatrek?
So yeah, that will be there is a lot of work that needs to be done on Hexatrek. We need to beef up the NGO so that it is say sustainable by itself. We need to find money because we have absolutely no money for it for the moment, so it's limiting everything we want to do. We need to create a team. We need to create some people on the field that can actually do the work. We need to There is a ton of things to do on the Hexatrek, and it's exciting because we're developing a trail that we want it to be one of the main trails in Europe, if not the main trail in Europe. We want to have people. We have a lot of Europeans who want to go to the US to do the PCT or the Appalachian Trail. We want them to be able to just say, to have the Hexatrek as one of the options as well, and to be as famous as it is for the PCT and the Appalachian Trail. And we have people already who said, yeah, I wanted to do one of those, but I saw the Hexatrek and it's more convenient, and yeah, I don't know France, so let's take a gamble. So there is this. I need to find a job at some point to pay for my bills. And in terms of adventures, I'm thinking about a lot of things, and at the same time, I'm thinking of nothing. It's kind of too many options. I don't know if I will do a thru hike again. I'm not sure. Because that one was a lot. And I think it was a little bit too long for my taste. The Via Adriatica was 1,100 kilometers, and I enjoyed it way more. At the end of the Hexatrek, I was really done with it. I was like, I want to finish it. I can't take another mountain. But if I had to thru hike again, I have two hikes that I really am interested in. There is the Transcaucasian Trail in Georgia and Armenia. I was living in Georgia for 3 months last year, and I met with one of the organizers. So big shout out to the Transcaucasian Trail. I found this project amazing. Crossing the Caucasus Mountains is just, and Georgia is just an amazing place. I mean, just I could talk for hours about that. So yeah, there will be the Transcaucasian Trail, which is also a trek that is quite fit. Quite brand new, and there is a lot of things to do. I don't think I would be excited to do a trail that is so famous like the Appalachian Trail anymore, because I don't have this feeling of discovering, I think. And the last one will be the trail in South Korea. I can't remember the name. Taedong, something like that. And it's a through hike to cross South Korea by foot through the mountains, and that excites me quite a lot because they love mountains, but a very different way than we do. And I want to discover that. And again, I love Korean food, so that's a bonus. So yeah, so it will be a trek in Georgia or in Korea if I had to do another one.
Nice. And I did the math while you were talking. It's 2,000 miles, 2,004 miles. So
Well, that sounds like a lot of miles.
that's pretty significant. Yeah, I mean 30, 40, 3,340 kilometers. That's significant as well. But just to put it to wrap my mind around thousand, that's big. That's big. And tell us about the name. Why Hexatrek? What's the significance of the hexa?
So hexa is a short for hexagon, and in France we call our country the hexagon. I know it's a thing that nobody knows outside of France, but if you read it, like for example, in the news, the news anchor will say, "And today in the hexagon we have blah blah blah," because it's shaped like a hexagon, and we always been calling it the hexagon. So hexa
Nice. I like that. And who knew? Who knew? I had no idea that
I know it's a, it, and we realize it's a very French thing, and it's this is what we like as well, because it's not so much in your face, and at the same time it is essentially French without having to be like too much French. So that was kind of a nice mix. Yeah, it was weird at first for the name for me, but it grew on me, and now it's yeah, I don't think of another name for that.
some insider information there about France. If you want to show off to the French next time you go visit, make sure you refer to the country as the hexagon. You'll be
Yeah.
accepted. They will immediately stop sharpening their knives on the way, and you'll be a welcome participant in whatever.
Definitely.
All right. Hey, Thomas, you know where we are?
I'm sorry.
You know where we are? Where are we?
Where we are in a podcast?
We are in a podcast, and
the pro tip insight of the week.
That's right, Half Calf. It is time for the pro tip insight of the week. Pumalo is going to share some trail wisdom with us to make our listeners' next outdoor experience even better. So, what do you have for us, Thomas?
Being Pomelo, I would say don't skimp on the luxury. Don't skimp on the thing that makes you happy in the morning. Don't skimp on the thing that makes you want to continue. I find that on a very long trail, especially the motivation runs off after a while. It gets boring. I know we shouldn't say that too much, but it gets boring after a while. It's always the same. So having something that makes you happy, something that you know will make you happy is essential. So for me, it is the small luxury item, my Kindle to read a book because sometimes I'm tired, I want that. It is my coffee maker, my AeroPress that I absolutely adore and makes me happy every time I take it out. I would say don't go the ultralight to be ultralight to be efficient. Stop trying to be efficient. Enjoy. Just yeah, slow down. That's fine. It's just like it's a different philosophy, and just enjoy the little things. Nobody is pushing you. Yeah, you're on the holidays. Enjoy.
Don't skimp and enjoy. That's fantastic. So there you have it. That's it. This episode is just about in the books. Hope our listeners enjoyed our time with Thomas. Want to thank him for joining us this week. Humalo, how can our listeners keep up with you on social media, and where can they find updates on your latest adventures and more information on the Hexatrek?
So you can go on hexatrek.com. That's the easiest one. We are also active on Instagram. You can check Hexatrek. It's quite easy to find. As for me, so as I said, my handle name is Cartapouille. So if you want to know more, you can follow me on Instagram. This is where I am the most active, and also on my YouTube channel, because during my Hexatrek through hike, I was recording a documentary, and now is the very annoying process of editing it. So it will take me weeks, but once it's ready, I will do episodes that I will publish on my channel. Again, Cartapouille on YouTube, and you can find me. And finally, if you want to leave the trail in a different way, you can listen to the podcast I was recording on the trail. It's called In a Tent with a Frenchman. It's available everywhere on Spotify, on I don't know, everywhere there is podcast. I think it's there. And In a Tent with a Frenchman is episodes of 5 minutes, 5 to 10 minutes that I was recording every night in my tent, talking about life on the trail, thoughts, everything. It's kind of a mixed bag of a lot of things. It gets to any kind of feelings. If I feel good, it's a good podcast. If I feel bad, it's a bad podcast. I mean, it's raw. I never recorded an episode two times. It's raw information every time. No matter what happened, I was recording my podcast. Even if it was midnight and I was drunk, I was recording my podcast, and I got drunk a lot. So yeah, that's a different way of living the trail, I think. And on the Instagram, you can see all tons of pictures and stuff that people like.
Is the podcast in English or French or both?
In English, in English.
English. Okay. All right. I am subscribing. I'm going to listen to that. That's awesome.
Cool. Right. At least one.
Yeah. Remember to check out the pod on social media as well. We are on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. And if you've got something you want to share with me, you can send it to me at johnfreakingmuir@gmail.com.
The Adventure Media Recommendation.
Thomas, I'm also looking to you to share a recommendation for a book, a movie, documentary, some kind of outdoor media that's going to help keep our listeners connected to the outdoors. We're calling this our Adventure Media Recommendation. What do you have for us?
This is where I'm terrible. I'm not consuming anything outdoor related. Because in my real life, I consume more video games related content. Like the outdoor is such outside of my daily scope. So the only thing I could say is a walk in the woods, because that's probably the only one I read, and I don't want to read another one. It's fine. I'm done. I'm just, this is the one. So yeah, a big classic, the most classic ever, but A Walk in the Woods I can't remember even the name of the author, but it's
Bryson.
Perfect. Bryson. Yeah. Yes. Bill Bryson. Yeah.
Yep. I had a feeling you were going to go there when you started that whole thing about, I don't know. And
I mean, you know, I go for the most classic of them all. It makes sense. It's like a book recommendation. You can say Tolkien. You know, you're never wrong. It works.
Solid. Solid. Okay.
What have we not asked you?
All right. And before we wrap things up, just one more segment for you called What Have I Not Asked You That You're Dying to Tell Us About? What did we miss today?
I would talk about the difference you can have between a French trail and an American trail, because obviously I imagine the audience here being more American based and on through hiking. I would like to explain a little bit more what this Hexatrek is about. Because we wanted to say so much that it's the French PCT that I think we misled people. We will never have in France as much wilderness as there is in the US. The US is gigantic, and you have a lot of places with literally nothing. The Hexatrek will never be like that. It's not possible. We are in a small country that is well developed, and the trails in the mountains have been existing for hundreds of years. It's been used forever. So you will go on the Hexatrek in tons of mountains, in tons of wilderness. You can put your tents every night, almost everywhere. So there won't be any problem on that. But you will pass so many villages. You will pass so many farms. You will pass so many restaurants, so many auberges, so many. You will always have a blend of wilderness and culture. And I think this is something very unique to the trail that I discovered while doing it. I love this mix because it allows me to have a meal in a small French restaurant with local food that is produced exactly where I'm going to sleep this night, which is up the mountain. So you will discover, for example, in the first part, areas, there is a Nazi concentration camp, because that's part of the history of the region. You will find a battlefield for the World War One and a battlefield for World War II. You will find churches everywhere, castles everywhere that have been built a thousand years. The history is everywhere. Culturally speaking, I invite you to try every possible cheese you will encounter, because you will walk in the mountain, and on one side of the mountain there is one cheese, and on the other side there is a different cheese, and they all have a different history and different taste and a different way of being eaten. So what I love about the Hexatrek is not that it is a wild trail, but it's a European trail. We will never have this kind of wilderness, but we have this blend that works, to me, exceptionally well. So don't try to push miles. I don't think pushing miles is made for this, because you will skimp on a lot of things that are amazing. Don't eat only dry food. You will find a ton of good food on the trail. I mean, this is, I can tell. you will find a ton of things that will blow your mind. So don't go to the Hexatrek like you would go on the PCT. Be more mindful of what the trek is going to give you. Doesn't mean that you can't. You do absolutely what you want. If you want to run it, you can. Somebody actually ran it already, so you can definitely run it, and you can push miles if you want. But I think that there is more to discover if you take your time and enjoy it, as to discover the country and the culture, and not just another pile of rock. It's more than mountains. There is so much more.
That is fantastic. I'm sold. Where do I sign? Is there a permit process? How does this work?
No, but for the moment, we have nothing, because we don't have any legality. We are passing on trails that already exist. So anybody can just pick up the GPX and just go. And if you don't like the way the trek is taking you, we're in France. We have a ton of trails that are side to this one. So if you don't want to go somewhere, just don't. Take another one. It doesn't matter. Just walk. It's fine. We're not very strict. We're French.
I thought for sure there'd be three guys out there in berets checking permits.
Yeah, no, sadly, no. We will have an army of beret men later, but not now.
All right. Hey, fantastic. That's a wrap from the John Freaking Muir studio. Any shout outs to friends and family, Thomas?
Well, a big shout out to the Hexatrek family. So Kevin, William, and Dylan. A big shout out to them, because without this team, we would not have done anything. Well, friends, if you speak English and that you've been hearing, well, thank you for listening to me. And family, obviously not, because they don't speak English. So my mom would not care in the world. So yeah, no, I'm nothing else. Yeah, the Hexatrek team, and the people who were crazy enough to believe in us and go on the trek this year. If you've been listening to this podcast, I can't believe that you took a leap of faith to do a trail that doesn't exist, and it makes us pass not for insanes, but for people who actually have a project that can work. So that's amazing.
All right. Two things. Big shout out to Pumalo's mom. Let her know that Doc said hi. And then also your score has been adjusted downward into the 30s because of the whole minefield story. So there you go.
Oh, Rick. Yes. Yeah. I knew this would just plummet the score.
All right. Hey, thank you for tuning in. Always remember, the trail is the trail. It doesn't care if you want to go downhill. Doesn't care if it's almost dark and you're looking for a campsite. It doesn't even care if you've just hiked through a minefield and you've consumed all of your emergency alcohol. The trail is the trail. Embrace the suck.